Great to have you along here on WPR News. Our next guest just landed essentially at the studio, literally. Larry Mueller here, and we have a couple of guests for you to tell us about learning to fly an airplane. One of them is Kyle Caleby, who is founder of Windborne Flight School in Racine and a flight instructor. And Kyle, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us in.
And Tom, I hope you're hearing or have some sound coming through your headphones. Are you? No.
I don't think so.
Oh, we're hearing you. We'll get that fixed here in just a minute. Tom Cox is the other guest. Tom is a student at Windborne Flight School, and he earned an advanced flight certification in addition to his standard flying license. So both with us. And while we get Tom's sound fixed here, we'll talk to Kyle for a minute. How was the flight?
The weather's beautiful today. Very clear, no turbulence. Straight shot from Milwaukee up to here. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And tell us then a little more about the Windborne Flight School. What do students there learn about aviation?
So it's the earliest part of flight instruction. I kind of think of it as the primary or elementary school of flight. A lot of students call in thinking, or prospective students, they call in thinking that I can work with them for a few months and send them to the airlines, but it's not like that. I do about the first 250 to 300 hours in the first three certificates.
Okay, yeah. So 300 hours.
About, yeah.
So the first certificate, what's the first certificate?
Yeah, that's called a private pilot. And what that allows you to do is to conduct and plan your own flights in fair weather. So yeah, you have to be able to completely see out the window. And there's weather minimums for that. And I'm not going to get into like the technical numbers or anything like that. But basically, it has to be fair weather.
Okay, yeah. And the second?
And this is the one that Tom just did. So that's going to be the instrument rating. And so now Tom can fly through poor visibility weather. And we practice that and we go through all the regulations. Essentially, what you do is you are required to talk to air traffic control the whole time because you can't see where you're going and you can't to avoid other planes and stuff like that. And you learn all the rules and practice doing that, which obviously not seeing out the window, you don't know where you're going, you feel like you're tumbling over and over, things like that. So you get used to zeroing in on the instruments so that you can conduct those flights competently. Yeah.
So that's the second. And the third is?
Commercial. So that's 250 hours. Then you can take the commercial rating. And that allows you, that makes you hireable for things like skydiving and map surveying and anything in a small airplane as you build hours to airlines. Yeah.
I had a friend who took the flight lessons and then got really interested in the planes themselves. And Keith Swallheim was his name. And he got into restoring older planes and really found a lot of joy in that. Do you ever have anybody get that far or into that?
Tom probably knows more about that kind of stuff than I do.
So I own a couple airplanes.
Oh, you do?
Yes. One's called a Compair 6. The other is a Quickie Q2. Both experimental airplanes built at home. The one was built at the kit manufacturer in Florida. But anyway, I've purchased them and gone through, done some updating and upgrades and avionics work in them. And
It's very cool. Why did you decide to learn how to fly?
So from a young age, all I can remember wanting to be was a pilot. I was dead set on that's what I was going to do. My grandfather was a pilot. And I did get my private pilot's license when I was 18 or 19. But at the time in the early 2000s was not a great time to get into aviation as a career path. The the airlines in the very top jobs paid great, but the middle line jobs and the regionals were terrible. That's all changed now. They're much better paying stuff now, but that's how I got into wanting to fly.
Wow. So you must, I want to go back to Kyle for a minute, because your flight school must have to work with, what is it, Racine's International, Baton International
Airport? Yeah, so it's the Racine Airport. That's a little bit grandiose of a name, because they they have customs for a few of, like, the business jets that come in and out of there. And that's why it's international. It's usually pretty sleepy, though, but the plus side of that is that the runways are really big, and it's a great place to train.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. How many students might you work with over the course of time?
So I opened in April. I've passed two students, including Tom, through IFR. And then I've been training maybe another 8, 9, 10 about that. Yeah.
It's really, really cool. What are some good memories you've had of while flying? I'm going to ask you both that question.
So right after I got my license and then I bought a plane about a year later, just getting into these small airports in Wisconsin and places that I never would have gone, although Verona's not that small, right? I know it's near here. That's why I bring it up. They have this grass runway really close to a barn, and it's in the middle of trees. So when you take off, you have to take off perfectly. Otherwise, you can't clear the trees because it's still only like, I don't know, 1,800 feet or 1,900. I think they're going to close it soon, but it's a Verona airport. I went there just to pick up something from friends in Verona. But they have the stamp system where you go there and you get your aviation stamp or passport stamp, or and I think the Department of Transportation does it or something like that. But and then people will go around and it'll give people a reason to explore all these little airports and towns that they normally wouldn't. The reason I bring that up is because it forced me to deal with that situation, that runway. And it's not paved. It's a grass runway as well. And yet it's just, it puts you on your toes to do everything perfectly and put all your skills. So just things like that where I had to use all of my skills to do it safely and competently and actually see some part of Wisconsin that I hadn't seen before.
Yeah. Well, Tom, turn to you.
Really, flying's been great. My wife and I go on a lot of little trips, and it just opens the doors up to where we can go and where we can get to in a weekend, or things, you know, that go visit friends. And with a airlines, you're stuck going to large airports, you know, then possibly hours of commuting. But there's an airport, small little airport nearby almost everybody. It's really, really opens up the door to exploring a lot of off the path stuff.
Yeah, it's I have no idea how many small airports there are in the state.
So Wisconsin has 124 public use airports and many, many more privately owned airports on top of that.
So you can get you're going to get anywhere in the state.
Yeah, it's you're getting close to wherever you want to go. There's something that's not far away.
I know we were one time going up to the Bayfield area, and Keith, flew us up there and landed. There's an airport by the town of Barnes, landed up there, and it was really a lot of fun to go in and out of that small airport and then come back to Madison. And the Madison airport, obviously it's a bigger airport, but there's a separate airport or a separate spot, I think, for private planes to come in.
Yeah, I think that's what we use today.
We're talking today with Kyle Calaby, who is the founder of Windborne Flight School in Racine, and with Tom Cox. Tom's a student at Windborne Flight School. He's earned an advanced flight certification in addition to his standard flying license. Have you ever thought about flying? Questions about the coursework or the things you have to go through, I'd love to hear from you. The number to call, 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. We're taking a look at flying on the show right now, and maybe a little bit about how to become a pilot. You can, you know, it's possible to do it here in Wisconsin. Talk to Kyle Caleby, for one. He's the founder of Windborne Flight School in Racine. Tom Cox is one of the students at Windborne Flight School and has an advanced flight certification in addition to his standard flying license. We'll take your calls at 800-642-1234 or email to talk at WPR.org. Let's take a call from Kevin in Deerfield. Kevin, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm actually a neighbor to where Keith Swalheim kept his planes, and he had an airstrip there. And I have wondered, what is required to is it to have an airstrip somewhere? Like if you have farmland or private property, do you know if anybody can just have a plane on their property and have an airstrip that you can fly in and out of, or what is required?
Yeah, interesting. Tom?
Yeah, there's going to be no requirements on being able to fly in and out of your property unless you have local ordinances that prevent it. So if you have, you could bring a plane in and land it on your own property, go ahead, you could do it.
So you just need to check with local government, I assume.
This would be your local government, yes.
All right, there you go. Thank you so much, Kevin, for that question. Appreciate it very much, and glad to know you were a neighbor to my friend. Appreciate it very much. Well, the different kind there, so the beyond the three that you deal with, Kyle, are there you need more for?
Yeah, so there's getting multi-engine, for instance, right, or a lot of other specializations. So being able to fly planes with more than one engine, all the complications involved in that. But then, yeah, ultimately, if someone is doing it for a career where they need the airline license, that one can be worked on once you reach 1,500 hours. So after me, they go and do those small airplane jobs and build up to that time.
So so it's a question really then of building up time in the air.
Yeah, for people who want to go to airlines, yeah.
Yeah, for people who want to go to airlines. Or what about, I suppose the same would be, I also know somebody who actually retired not long ago, flew for UPS.
Oh, yeah, yep, yep.
Would that be a similar requirement?
Well, those are going to be cargo planes, but yeah, they're certainly heavy enough to require that the people flying them would have the airline license, yes, yeah.
And that's called an ATP, airline transport pilot.
Airline transport pilot. Well, I think he did fairly, you know, he did fairly well. He was kind of happy with his job, that's for sure. I know he liked doing the work for sure. Helen in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Helen.
Hi. I'm wondering if the instructor and student can give some insight into how you would calm someone of their fears of flying in the first place. I miss out on some of the beauty of travel just because I am just so fearful of flying.
Oh.
I have an idea. When I was first learning, and this was in my first 10 hours or something like that, especially in a climb where you can't see the horizon out the front window when you're kind of pointed upward a little bit, I felt like I was in this sort of tumbling backwards feeling. What my instructor did was set up a perfect climbing turn so that we leveled out and we had this amazing view of Milwaukee with the lakefront and all that stuff. And that was a moment where it's like, hey, I can do this climbing turn and, oh, everything on the ground is still there. The reason I say all this is because most flight schools will have what's called a discovery flight, where because all of the forces and things that you feel in the small plane are more exaggerated and you can see out the front window to see where you're going. That might be one way to, you know, create an experience like that makes someone more comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah, and just the general fear of getting on an airplane to fly from, I don't know, Madison to Florida or something. Have you ever have people ask you about that? How do I just get over this whole business about it?
Not a whole lot, but the thing is, with the airlines have shown to be the absolute safest form of transportation there is. If you look statistics wise, you're more likely to get struck by lightning than you are to be in a aircraft accident at the airlines.
you know, something else is turbulence is always really scary because as you start to bump around, you get that feeling like the plane is falling out of the air. Turbulence is annoying, but it's not unsafe unless it's, you know, in a hurricane or something. But yeah, it's annoying, but it's not unsafe.
Yeah. So how do pilot license vary? Tom, what are you qualified to fly for versus somebody who might have gone the third section?
So I have a private pilot's license, and I have an instrument rating. So I'm right now, I don't have a commercial license, so I'm just not allowed to fly for hire. Someone can't pay me to do something to fly. So the next one would be commercial, and someone I could then take jobs flying. I still can't just take my own airplane and offer to transport people around with it. There's some still more regulations from the FAA involved with that, but someone could pay me to fly other planes for them and other situations.
What's the first thing you learn or you teach, Kyle, when somebody comes in and says, okay, I want to become, I want to fly?
All right. Well, this is the discovery flight. We show them the pre-flight on the ground, but the biggest thing in the air is that they can do everything on a basic flight except for landing. So I can show them how to take off. And then we talk about the four basics is the big first thing, which is climbs, straight and level flight, turns, and descents. And then we teach them how to do that looking out the windows without focusing on the instruments, because we want them to get a visual reference for, you know, how the mechanics of the airplane work. So four basics is my answer. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as I was thinking back to another friend, this goes back a ways, but when I forget what stage he was in, but for that stage, he had to do a complete instrument landing. He couldn't see. He was essentially, I don't know if they put a hood over him or blind.
I feel like that's what you just did.
Yes. Yeah. So I just got my instrument rating, and that is to where you can fly with zero outside reference at all. And when you're in a cloud, you can't tell which way is up, down, left, right. You have to solely just rely on the airplane's instruments. And our balance comes from our inner ear. Our inner ear gets kind of messed up when you doesn't have reference to horizon and everything else. People have put planes in, and you could be in a turn and it feels like you're straight and level, or straight and level and it feels like you're turning, and you have to kind of block out what your body's telling you, because your body is giving you bad information, and you mm-hmm. have to just go
rely on
just the instruments, even though it feels like you're doing something completely different than what's going on.
So what's the hardest part? What was the hardest thing that you had to learn, Tom?
The hardest, I don't know what exactly was the hardest. I guess getting into where, just knowing a lot of the rules, regulations, getting into the bookwork type stuff is the hardest to me. Flying came very easy to me. Now, and that's not the same as other people. Other people have, you know, can read the book and no problem, but they have problems with the finesse on landing and stuff like that. So it's kind of, each person has their individual little challenges and stuff, and it kind of varies person to person, but that's where some of the smaller flight schools tailor to individual learning a lot better.
Yeah. Dan emailed us, it seems like the use of helicopters for transporting medical patients is becoming more popular, and certainly we see that in Madison, with the University Health, a lot of transport going that way. What training, Dan wants to know, what training would these pilots have to go through?
Yeah, so I don't offer this, but when people get their private license, for us, it's private pilot single engine airplane land. So you can be private pilot or commercial pilot helicopter. So it's just a different flight school. To the point of hearing all of the medical helicopters, I hear them all the time when I'm talking to controllers as they transition to a hospital or something. So it's very common. It's just not as easy as an airplane to rent. So like if I were to go and get my helicopter license, again, private helicopter license, I could conduct flights, but it's not as common to find a rental. But those training opportunities are out there.
Yeah,
for sure.
Helicopters are expensive too.
Yeah, they're expensive.
If you think airplanes are expensive, helicopters are expensive.
I forget where I was. This is a long time ago, but there was a simulator for flying a helicopter, And I simulated crashing.
Everyone does that on the simulator.
many times. Is it worth it for becoming a pilot? Is a simulator a good thing?
Yeah, so there's regulations around that too, especially for instrument training. You can do a good amount of your instrument training for your instrument license on a simulator. It has to be approved. And that also makes them super expensive because the manufacturer had to go through that approval process. So it's not just like you can go on your computer at home, fire up the at-home simulator and log that. But if it's...
You can't log it, but at-home simulators have gotten really good.
That's
and
true.
There's a lot of things you can learn at an at-home simulator as well, or just especially on just kind of some of the... More regulations or just to stay proficient in some of the things and procedure wise stuff of what to do on a simulator works very well for staying caught up on stuff.
Yeah. Greg in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Greg.
Hello, Larry. I wanted to ask your pilots about age limitations. I'm 56 and it's interesting, but I have the sense that maybe I'm a little late to the party or, you know, you go through the process and then you get find out that you're grounded because you're too old to fly.
So Greg, I have a student that just started who mid-50s and is learning this for just pleasure and business reasons, right? They want to buy a plane eventually. They want to be able to travel for weekend things the same way that Tom talked about before. And so, the students that I have come in kind of split between those. So 40s, 50s, 30s in a career want to do flying for pleasure. And then the other half would be the career ones. And those are much younger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. You're not too old, Greg. Darn it.
Okay.
Thanks.
I'm trying to figure out that I might be too old.
No, yeah, absolutely not old.
Definitely not.
A lot of people start flying at your age. It is a ton of fun. It opens up the door to do a ton of things. You might be on the back end of wanting to be able to do it as a career, yes, but absolutely not to do it for yourself.
Yeah, that's for sure. Appreciate it very much. So how much time are we talking about at these various steps? I mean, for you, Kyle, for one of your students, what are you going to tell? Okay, I want to get that first step.
For sure. And there's a difference between what the regulations say and what the average is for someone to be ready for the check ride is what we call it at the end.
Yeah.
Where they have they go on a flight with an examiner to make sure that they know all the different things that are in the curriculum. The regulations say 40 hours. I think averages end up being in different flight schools say different things, but I would say 60, 65, 70. I think mine was 70 when I did it. And so that's the hours that you have when you go to take that final exam.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so when you're, let's say our previous caller now, would somebody like him come once a week or, how do those sessions go?
So it's dependent on just money, right? Because if you have to drag it out a little bit because you're trying to make enough money to pay for it, sometimes that happens and that slows it down. But I try to say if you do it, 2 to 3 times a week, you can get through it in maybe like 6 to 9 months, especially in Wisconsin if you're going through the winter. There's all these days that you just can't go because, of course, that first license is fair weather only. But you can find flight schools that have weekend days. I'm working on getting more instructors for the weekends. They can tailor the schedule to you and your needs. So 2-3 times a week, I would say.
And what would be sort of a ballpark cost in terms of getting that first license?
It's
going to vary.
It varies from school to school. Different planes have different quality of equipment. So at my school, I quote about 18,000 to 19,000, just for the private license.
To get the private license.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then you've got it.
You have to keep it up, though, don't you?
Yeah,
there's currency requirements. You have to do so many takeoffs and landings every, I think, 90 days. I don't know if there's any what other currency requirements. Every 2 years, you have to be reviewed by a flight instructor to make sure that you're still have the basic skills.
But then you, but you'd want to do that anyway.
Yeah, not, yeah, for sure.
And yes. That's why you're yep. getting it in the first place.
Yep. And like I said, difference between regulations and what's safe and what's, you know, recommended. But yeah,
and if you fly more often, and you could progress quicker too. If you're only flying once a week, you're going to end up yeah. requiring more total hours.
Yeah.
Than someone who's, you know, really flying often and flying a lot. They keep those skills sharp, and it's easier to kind of progress your skills quickly than if you're flying a lot. So, and then also studying at home, knowing, going through doing your groundwork and stuff. There's all kinds of apps, computer programs, stuff online that you could do all of this before you take your first lesson. You will progress much faster if you get to have the stuff done ahead of time, to where it's easier to learn because you might have seen it versus, you know, the first few lessons. There's so much information to take in that it's, you know, like drinking out of a fire hose, and you're only going to catch a little bit. You're not going to catch all of it.
And here we are out of time. I'm sorry we didn't get to Bob in Cambridge had a float plane question, but we don't have time for that. Kyle Calabi, I should say, founder of Windborne Flight School. Take a look at his website, Windborne Flight School in Racine. Tom Cox, one of his students. It's great to have them with us today. And thank you for listening. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR.